Much of the Midlands. Outbreaks of rain developing, fairly sporadic, one or two staying dry, but it will be a cloudy end to the day and quite damp one for many. But for East Anglia and the South East, after the wet and windy weather of Tuesday, Wednesday turning a good deal drier and brighter with some afternoon sunshine and highs of 16 to 18.
Sounds like the sunny sandal days are over. Time to get the wellies out. Thanks, Matt. Matt Taylor there at the BBC Weather Centre. Now, our book of the week, Deep Sea and Foreign Going. As her investigation into the shipping industry continues, journalist Rose George has settled into life on board the container ship Maersk Kendall with surprising ease. Susie Riddell is the reader.
Before I came aboard, people asked me how I would fill my days. They also asked me whether I would be safe. By now, I have stopped locking my cabin door when I leave and leave it wide open like everyone else. And filling days is easy. First breakfast and a walk on deck. I'm supposed to wear a hard hat, but as the days go on, my clothing gets less safety conscious. My heavy-toed boots become trainers or sandals as the weather gets more southern. The hard hat is discarded. I have seen jogging corridors on some ships, but there is no running on Kendall's deck. The mileage, four loops to a mile, can be walked only, and the boredom of those loops is leavened by changing directions. One morning forward, the next aft. I often head for the forecastle. It has become my terrace and garden. Unescorted, I am free to lean over the bulbous bow and watch it move water. This doesn't feel like a hazardous activity, but it is. A swell could tip me with ease. Who would know? The bridge can't see the forecastle because of containers in its line of sight, and I have no radio. The crew on deck are too busy. There is usually the whining sound of a drill somewhere as one of them chips off the rusted paint to replace it with new. Or they are working in the narrow corridors between containers, or head down splicing ropes. The ship needs constant care, an 80,000-ton toddler. They have no time to look out to sea, and no reason to. A small head in the water would not be seen. Nothing can be heard over the engine and the waves. Captain Glenn is often to be found on the bridge. He is here for port approaches and departures, but also whenever he can escape paperwork, which is not as often as he would like. Glenn is the most senior captain in Maersk's container fleet. In past times he would have been known as a commodore and saluted as such by the raising of flags on courteous passing ships. His talk turns often to earlier times, because he has enough hinterland to have plenty, and because in those four decades life at sea has changed dramatically. His first ship was a tramp steamer, a freelance ship that picked up trade where it could, unlike a liner with a scheduled route like Kendall. A taxi, not a bus. It was iron, had derrick cranes on deck to heft cargo about, and was held together by rivets. Rivets! Not like this Korean-made welded ship, only 4 years old. Still, he is not entirely nostalgic, and always loves whichever ship he commands. He says of this one, "Isn't she beautiful?" and salutes her every day with a stroke or a tap, a formal and ritual greeting. He is scornful of a modern trend in maritime journalism to call ships it. What nonsense. His ship is a she. Why? She just is. Sometime towards the end of the 1960s, when he was a young cadet, the captain saw his first boxes. They were being carried by an American ship that was departing Hong Kong while his ship was arriving. I was out on the poop deck and some of the crew said, "Look, that's a container, that's a thing of the future." He didn't pay much attention because cadets didn't pay much attention to things like the creation of globalisation. There are 20 million containers crossing the world now. Quiet, blank boxes, thanks to a US businessman named Malcolm McLean, who thought people who moved freight would find it easier if they could shift everything in a box, rather than having the confusion of barrels and boxes and piles, of each company having its own system. This new box could fit trains, trucks, cranes and ships alike. This intermodality made perfect commercial sense, and labour unions hated it. McLean claimed his box system reduced labour by two-thirds, reducing dock workers' workload, salary and power. For a while they held up the march of the box, as did geography and physics. Ships that carried many boxes would have to be bigger. New ports had to be built. New York's maritime wharfs, too shallow, too narrow, became useless, and the massive Greater Port of New York, New Jersey was constructed instead. The rewards of containerization were too great for the dockers to defeat change. Before containers, transport costs ate up to 25% of the value of whatever was being shipped. With the extreme efficiencies that intermodality brought, costs were reduced to a pittance. A sweater can now travel 3,000 miles for 2.5 cents. It costs a cent to send a can of beer. By his junior officer days, the captain was in favour of boxes. They looked like a simpler life. Then, more and more, he learned that the boxes gave the gift of speed, but they sucked away his time. You wouldn't get any sleep when port hours were so rushed and hurried. Before boxes, he would wonder if he had time to go ashore for dinner. Now he wonders if he has time to get a newspaper. A modern container ship is crewed by people who have no idea what they are carrying. Kendall's crew only know the contents of the refrigerated boxes and the flammable or toxic goods, so that they can put out fires if necessary. We are carrying paint, lacquer, enamel, stain, shellac solutions, varnish and polish. Somewhere there is liquid flavouring which is highly flammable and may cause vapours that explode when they meet air. Elsewhere there is a chemical that can be used in air fresheners or to reduce odour in permed hair. There are 180,000 kilograms of metal powder, self-heating. This, I read, may react violently with water. On a ship at sea, in containers that are weatherproof, not waterproof. The Suez Canal took 10 years to construct, is 100 miles long, and earns the Egyptian government £3 billion a year. A magnificent effort of engineering that removed 10 days from the usual 24-day journey that ships would have to make under Africa and up again to Europe. Right, say the crew, but it's still just a ditch in a desert. They go through Suez once a month, and it's a pain. Suez doesn't have locks like Panama, which at least provides some interest, and the scenery is duller too. First, we park. Ships go through Suez in convoy. 40,000 ships pass every year, although it costs nearly $300,000 per transit for a ship the size of Kendall. The channel is only 200 metres wide, and so can only hold one-way traffic. Another Maersk ship approaches while we are heading to our anchorage. It is doing 11 knots and tries to overtake, then messes up and has to go behind us. The captain shakes his head wearily. He says, "It's mine is bigger than yours, isn't it?" The other ship wanted to steal our anchorage space. It was the maritime equivalent of nipping into a supermarket parking space, and as pathetic. Suez is known as the Marlborough Canal, because for smooth passage, every ship's captain has to have a ready stock of cigarettes to dispense. The port captain takes 4 packets to share. The shipping agent takes a few. The electrician gets 4 packets, the boat crew gets 6. Kendall's crew say, "The Egyptians can't have built the pyramids. There was no Marlborough then." I wake from a nap to find we are in the ditch. By now the convoy numbers 30. The water is green, the banks are sand. From D-deck I gaze at the desert, at an irrigated patch of green trees and plants that form a streak of freshness and life in the middle of the beige. There are great ships in front of us, stretching along the channel, and more behind. We are a slow, sandwiched procession, squeezing through sand. Suez is exhausting. Going through Suez means staying awake for pilots and port controls. The captain stays particularly alert. Our passage seems so stately and secure through this canal. It seems that danger is impossible. Wrong, says the captain. Even the best captain can lose all his deck cargo. Boxes go overboard all the time. The European Union calculates that 2,000 containers are lost every year, that 15% come ashore and that 15% remain floating at sea, causing a serious hazard to small boats. Some boxes become notorious, such as the Nike shoes that were set adrift from the Hansa carrier between Korea and Los Angeles, then subsequently tracked by the oceanographer Curtis Ebersmeyer, assisted by a worldwide subculture of people who collect flotsam. From his work, I learned that sports shoes generally float with the tongues facing upwards, unless they contain feet, which is not unheard of. That containers filled with computer and television monitors can discharge lead, mercury, cadmium and other heavy metals into the water. 8 pounds of lead for each monitor. The Atlantic was bad 5 years ago, says the captain. Lots of damaged goods. But then they put stabilizers on ships and it got better. Arranging 6,000 or so heavy steel boxes into a logistic balance according to their weight, stability and contents requires enormous skill. It is always the job of the chief officer. Kendall's chief officer, Vinton, is remarkably relaxed in manner, and it is a surprise when I ask him how many boxes are on board that he can always answer sharply and precisely, though every port changes the number. Stowage is no easier, just less manual. Everyone has a story about stowaways. Vinton found one hidden inside a bunk. The man had drilled holes in the wood for air and hidden beneath the slats. Vinton says that you hear stories all the time. In 2010, Ghana's authorities arrested three Chinese crew for throwing overboard three Ivorians who had hidden on their freighter. Taiwanese officers of Maersk Dubai, when two young Romanian stowaways were found aboard in 1996, put the young men to sea in an improvised raft. They were never found. Those were extreme reactions, or maybe not. Read the International Maritime Organization's stowaway database, and you will start to calculate the probabilities. If these are the number of stowaways caught, how many are not? In the more porous ports of Europe, where migrants think they will find a ship sailing to America, the dry database reads like an onslaught. One port, Igoumenitsa, Greece. One ship, the cargo vessel Icarus Pallas. On the 3rd of February, one Somali. 3 days later, one Afghan. A Palestinian a week later. On the 10th of March, one Albanian. And then, one Palestinian, one Albanian, two Eritrean, one Palestinian, one Afghan, one Afghan, one Albanian, one Afghan, two Tunisian. I wonder, what is going on in Igoumenitsa? And I know what is going on in Igoumenitsa. Ships call and ships leave, and people see their movements as escape, as they have done and as they always will. Vinton must always keep an eye out for strangers on board, and now he must watch for strangers overboard too. We are not yet in the danger zone, but pirates are already infecting our passage. The time and place for such considerations is approaching, even while we steam through this quiet green water pacifically, a majestic daisy chain of sedate ships. It is too hot to be on deck. It is too dull on the bridge now that I've seen 12 hours of desert and canal and the rest of the miles look the same. There is nothing to do but wait. Steaming on, heading for danger, going south.
Susie Riddell was reading from Deep Sea and Foreign Going by Rose George. The abridger is Lawrence Waring and the producer is Ailey McCready. Now, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Wednesday, the 11th of September. There are warnings of gales in Humber, Thames, Dover, Trafalgar and Fitzroy. The general synopsis at 1800, low Netherlands, 1004, expect Germany, 1010 by 1800 Wednesday. High, just west of Fitzroy, 1,035, slow moving, declining 1,030 by same time. The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking, north at Sierra, south at Sierra, 40s. Northerly, 5 or 6, becoming variable 4. Showers, good. Cromarty, 4th. Northwest, 4 or 5, becoming variable 3. Occasional rain, good, becoming moderate or poor. Tyne Dogger, north 5.